In AD 1181, King Jayavarman VII, who was a Buddhist, started building a huge new capital at Angkor Thom, nearby. Another vast work. Doesn't quite have the impact to the visitor that Angkor Wat does, because it's more spread out. But a dark and forbidding 8-mile wall surrounds what was his capital with its grand plaza, where ceremonies and contests and vast military reviews were staged. As many as 1 million people lived in or near Angkor Thom, which today is partially overgrown. The statistics from the temples speak for themselves. Jayavarman dedicated the Tar Prom temple nearby to his mother in the image of Buddha's mother. An inscription records that 306,372 people from 13,500 villages worked for the shrine, consuming 38,000 tons of rice annually. These figures may be exaggerated, but one suspects that the cost was close to that. All of this stupendous construction was designed to make merit for the king and his rich followers. You served the king by giving gifts to him and making construction. His projects created a totally centripetal religious utopia in which every product, every person's labor, embellished the hub of the universe and the kings who enjoyed it. The ruler's power depended on the granting of favors, on his successful patronizing of the major aristocratic families. There was no stable bureaucracy like there was in Egypt. There were no appointed officials to run the state as there were in China. A king's hold in power depended entirely on his ability to control the center, the Angkor. Now, a strong monarch like Jayavarman VII commanded the loyalty of the aristocrats who ruled the outlying boundaries of the kingdom. But the moment it was weak at the center, the periphery tended to break off. And this kingdom, in a way, was like a ripe apple waiting to be plucked from a tree. In AD 1430-31, just before Columbus sailed to the Indies, a Thai army from the west besieged Angkor, and the magnificent Khmer kingdom dissolved quickly, and the great temples and palaces dissolved, overgrown into the rainforest again. But by this time, there'd been changes in the outside world. The strategic trade routes, the web of interconnection to India, had now come under the influence of an expanding Islam. The port of Malacca on the islands became an important center in a new, much bigger international spice trade. Even more important than this, the new religion preached a message of religious egalitarianism in the face of centuries of divine rule, which were based ultimately on Indian notions of kingship. No longer was the king the pinnacle. And very rapidly, the Khmer world dissolved and became just a memory. So in this lecture, we've filled in the final bit of this web of interconnection. We've shown how Southeast Asian civilization was a mixture of indigenous development, of religious ideas and notions of kingship from outside. We've shown how divine kingship developed in the Tonle Sap into this extraordinary centripetalized, almost self-destructive form of states, the results of which architecturally were masterpieces. Everything was spent to glorify the ruler and the gods. And we've shown how this rapidly collapsed in the face of outside Islam and invasion. And with this, we come to the end of our exploration of the old world. And in the next lectures, we will go to the Americas.